Welcome to the Carpcast. Introducing the two biggest nods that don't use jobs. They're old, grumpy, and they're pretty opinionated. Here's your hosts, it's Mark and Jamie.
Hello and welcome to episode 6 of the Carpcast. How you doing, Mark?
I'm doing fine, mate. And yourself?
Good. Always pleased as those numbers go up. Number 6, wow. It's been a couple of months. We've now had thousands, over 5,000 listens, and we're finally on iTunes.
We are. We've made it. That's, I don't know, it's probably not... massive in the general scale of thing, because there's thousands and thousands of podcasts already on there, but it was a bit of a holy grail to us to actually get there and jump through all the hoops that you have to.
Yep, it's good. So if you search the Carpcast on iTunes, you'll find it. There's a couple of links on our Facebook page that will also do it automatically for you. Just click the link and it'll load it straight into your iTunes. We're going to keep making it as accessible as possible for people to listen, and we're glad everyone seems to be like it, seems to be building. I went fishing this week, as you know, because I saw you on the bank for a night, and the amount of people that commented on it, that had ideas for guests, it shows that it's getting out there and people are listening.
Yeah, definitely. It's pleasing to hear as well. You know, we are getting out there, and also dropped a few flyers off with Nathan. We were at Cromwell Lakes, obviously.
One sec, Rachel's interrupting. Mrs. has not had a passport for weeks. We've got to get the visas for America. It's arrived today and she's let the cat eat it.
I shouldn't laugh, but having cats, I know exactly how that goes.
Doesn't eat anything. It's just decided to eat that. She's on the phone to her mum all excited because she's got a passport, and within 5 minutes of owning it, the cat's ate it.
Oh, cat wants you to stay at home. Where were we?
It was nice to bump into people that are obviously listening to the show, and they all had ideas. A lot of them requested this week's guest, which is Alan Blair from Nash Tackle. Quite a few people interested in hearing him because of the Urban Banks thing, and he's just a general all-round angler that I think people like watching. So Alan will be on shortly.
Yeah, he's an all-round nice guy who... you know, watched him doing part of his talk at your show at the Manchester, and he comes across really well, really enthusiastic.
And I think we should skip over my fishing session fairly briefly.
I think we should go in depth and find out exactly what went off, what went wrong.
Well, I turned up late, was really busy. I'd gone to Cromwell, and we speak
about the excuses are coming already.
Yeah, to be fair, there was fish all over me when I got there. They were showing everywhere. I put a couple of zigs in the area and kept getting like phantom takes. It happened about four times, which I saw it happen on other people's rods while I was there. I think there's a fish trailing a lead or a big chunk of weed or something, and it was the same thing: a few bleeps, then a slow take, bobbing the tighten up, and the reel start spinning slowly, and then it was like somebody cut the line. It had just dropped down to the floor and go slack. I'm pretty sure it was a trailer, but. It made for some action on the first day because, you know, kept striking, nothing there, like putting it out again, same thing had happened. And I'm not sure if I actually had a take or not on that first day. Can't work it out. But by next morning, the fish had gone. They'd completely got wind had changed. They'd gone up the other end of the lake. It was only
I was sat in your swim when you had one of those phantom takes. And I've got to be honest, it struck me as a trailer. And also the way you reacted, if you had any hair, you'd have pulled it out. It wasn't the first one.
No, well, there's just fish all over me. When you get, like, it's carp soup out in front of you, and there's like four showing at one time at one point when I looked
at it. You're on edge, aren't you? Every bleep gets you going.
And you just presume it's going to carry on. You know, when you wake up in the morning, you don't see a single fish. You're just like, oh, that's that chance gone. You know, will they come back at any point during the session? And then it was really busy as well, so there was no opportunity to move. There was only a couple of fish out while we were there. Well, three, actually. No, four, to be fair. I was there three nights, and there was four fish out in total, but they were 34, 35, and 44 and a half. And there was a 22 out as well, I think.
I didn't know that 44 come out. Was that Rosie again?
Rosie again, peg one, which was actually just to the right of me. That was my last night. I had a take about an hour before it and managed to lose it, managed to pull out of it.
Oh dear.
in
was
the
that
week.
On those new hooks you'd been showing us?
Yeah, it was actually.
I might give them a miss that.
I've tried some new hooks that were quite fine, but my mates had a load of fish to 54 in France on them, and he was raving about them and reckoned he was getting more bites on them because they are super sharp. And I've lost this fish. Normally when you get a take off the bottom and it's hooked, you know, they don't come off. It's rarely I lose fish once I've hooked them. And it hadn't locked up solid in weed. You know, it had got in weed, but it wasn't solid. It's quite early in the year, so the weed's not super thick. And it came off when it shouldn't really have done. And I did try and open the hook when I got it in, and you can kind of flex it with your fingers. So I've lost a bit of faith in them. I think I'm going to go back to my trusty twisters.
Yeah, that's not a bad choice. I think, I've been on them for a long time. Either twisters or occasionally ESP long shanks, the larger size of like sixes and fours.
Yeah, it's maybe a mistake on my part. Glad to have a bite. It was definitely a carp, you know. It's quite shallow, like 5 foot where I was fishing, and I sent it bow wave on the bite, and you know, I watched, you could see the fish where it was at every time during the fight through the vortexes and stuff. And like I say, I only had it on for 40 seconds or something. So a little bit disappointed.
No idea. Did you feel a bit out of practice?
A little bit. I did a session not long back, and that was kind of a just starting session, to, you know, first one of the year. This one, I felt like I was fishing okay, just limited. Once the fish moved, there wasn't a lot I could do. And when a couple did kind of come back, you know, I did get a bite. So, and, you know, I had 1/5 of the bites on the lake, so...
Yeah, that's not too bad though. So should we go on to my session?
Yep, obviously you started off, you did a night and you left for some reason, I'm not sure why.
Well, I arrived at Cromwell Lakes. I mean, you'd already told me how busy the lake was. I arrived there and there was actually one swim three, swim four, and it covers quite a large area of water, not too far from where you were fishing, where you had your carp soup. So I thought it'd be rude not to drop in for a night, although I don't think I got the rods in while gone 10 o'clock, having been sat around with you and Nathan, having an Indian and a couple of beers, having a social and a catch-up, which is great fun. Not conducive to catching carp, but great fun. So I was up early in the morning, watching the water, and other than lots of tench rolling, didn't see any actual carp. And... as you say, the lake was busy, and I'm not, how can I put this without sounding derogatory? I'm just unsociable.
You don't like sharing your peg?
No, I don't mind. That fella, because peg 4 and 5 is actually a double peg, so I was doubled up with a fella I'd never met before, and I can't even remember his name, but he was a lovely fella. He even made me a sausage sandwich in the morning, so I'll love him forever. and brown sauce.
And he's a carp cast listener, you know.
Yeah, you mentioned that. I had a good chat about all things carpy. But if I'm not on fish and I know it's not going to happen or not a good chance of happening, I can't sit still. Yeah. So I had one more night to fish. I could have stayed. There could have been a chance, as we all know. But I just needed a bit of freedom. Just needed to go and flex somewhere, do what I do, basically. So 5 minutes down the A1 is the A1 pits. So I popped down there, had a walk round, had a chat with the bailiff who got me up to speed. He was telling me pit 3 is doing a few fish. Pits 5 and 6 are still quite slow, they've not woken up yet. So I fished pit 5 for a night. I like a challenge, basically. That, and I'd also seen one or two fish launching out, but in the middle at good range. So watched them a bit more, and they did seem to be in one area more than the others, in front of this swim that a couple of lads had just vacated on the A1 bank. Now, there's one thing I learned a long, long time back, and you know, it's one of these little things you remember. And it was, actually, this is before I got into carping. I was reading about Tom Pickering feeder fishing on Lake Semmerwater, which is a big natural lake up in the Yorkshire Dales. And he was saying, if his cast goes wide, he doesn't leave it and chance it. It's straight back in. And if it takes 10, 20 casts to get it spot on for that bite, it takes 10, 20 casts. And call it OCD, but I like to get on that spot. And anyone who knows pit five, it is the proverbial egg box. It is up and down with features and bars. So I know when I was casting out there, I'm talking, you know, 120, 130 metres sort of range. Don't know exactly. I didn't measure it or have it out on the sticks. But when I was out there, you could either land in deep water down in the abyss where your chances of bite were minimal, or you could land up on one of the features and be in with a shout. Now, cast around with just a lead on two, this is two of the rods I put at range, I did find such features, and when the rig was on, it did take those 10 or 20 casts to get it back on the spot and get it back right, but it, I did. And one of them, it gave me a drop back, and in came a mid-double common.
So you didn't blank, at least.
No, I caught a carp. And you know what? Yeah, do you know what really pleases me as well? I've been at this for like 20 odd years. I've been lucky enough to have some nice big fish, and I actually got quite a buzz off catching a mid double.
Yep, I would. I've got some unfinished business on those pits. I think I'm going to be back there, but yeah, I would like to actually catch a fish out there. Which...
I'll book you in for a tuition if you want.
Yeah. Thanks. Moving on. It's on the net. Yeah. It must be true.
It's on the net. It must be true.
This is one from today that we've just been chatting around. A status from Lewis Porter, the Fox Media guy.
I've just spotted this before we came on air.
Yeah, it made me smile when I saw it because I totally agree with him. Yeah, and this is what Lewis Porter says. Please, any anglers on Facebook that we sponsor, never post shots up of tackle deliveries that you have received from us. No one on Facebook that isn't lucky enough to be supported by a manufacturer wants to have their faces rubbed in it by seeing boxes bulging with free or discounted products. Please concentrate on posting up the results of these products.
It's a good point, well made. You know, I'm not sure I'd have put it for the public to see. I think I'd have emailed the people in question directly. But I totally agree. You know, nobody wants to think that everyone else is getting it for nothing. And as somebody that's been sponsored for a number of years by a tackle company, I get enough grief on lakes anyway. People think you're filling it in because you get cheaper bait or whatever. You know, there's enough negatives to the whole world knowing your business anyway without like rubbing it in people's faces, you know.
Yeah, I've got to agree with that. And I've seen people put them up and you just think, oh, get over it, well done, I don't want to know.
I've not actually seen it, to be honest. I've never seen a picture of anybody just post, here's my free gear I've just got off Corda or Fox or Nash or whoever. I've never actually seen it, but they would be getting unfollowed as soon as I saw it.
Yeah, I have seen it quite a few times. I'm assuming Lewis has seen it today on something which has prompted this post.
Yeah, definitely.
That could be.
Definitely. I just think making a post like that for the public is kind of also saying, yes, we send people free gear. You know, it's kind of putting that out there, even though everybody knows it's true. It's almost as bad as rubbing people who don't get free gears facing it by seeing the picture. If you know what I mean? It's kind of the same thing. Yeah. I'd have just quietly bollocked all the people that were doing it.
Yeah, I agree with them, but let's qualify what we're saying about free gear. No company gives anyone free gear without them earning it.
No.
They don't just pluck someone, oh, you've caught a few big fish, you can have all this stuff. Still going to do shows, videos, articles, and as we both know, it can be hard bloody work at times.
Yeah, there isn't anything for free in this world, and especially if you're doing your job properly. But I know in my Nash contract, you know, I have to do X amount of shop days, show days, and living up here. I mean, if I have to go to Essex to the office, it's £130 return in fuel. That's one trip, and you know, if you get an allowance of, let's say, for argument's sake, you get £1,000 worth of bait per year and some end tackle. I guarantee that the shop days that I do, this is not counting your time as money, this is literally expenses, petrol, travelling and stuff, not to mention a day off work if you actually have to stop doing something else to do it. But I guarantee it costs more than £1,000 a year to actually maintain it. So, you know, I have often thought some years where I haven't done loads, I would actually be, you know, in a better position financially. I mean, the money isn't the reason why I do anything, so the money's irrelevant, but financially I might be better just buying equipment than, you know, receiving anything off anybody. But that isn't the reason, you know, I've been with Nash for 12, 13 years, and I do it because I'm loyal and I like their products. Not all of them, you know, but most of them. And, you know, I believe in the company. I've got a lot of friends that work there. I think Kev's a decent guy. It's no more, no less than any other company, but Nash is the company I'm with and would never go to a different company for, you know, just the fact that somebody might offer me a slightly better deal or cheaper bait, or, you know, it's not about that. It's about the loyalty for me, and especially the bait. I do like their products, so that's why I wouldn't. But it's not because I get loads of free stuff, that's for sure, because, like I say, I probably am no better off for doing it.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying, and it is for those reasons why I was offered a new contract back in September with them, but, you know, flatly declined the offer, all still on good terms, but I just couldn't do what they asked. I work Saturday, Sunday every week, which means for any of your shop days, show days, you know, using holiday days, which could be used for fishing.
Yeah.
And I've not been getting a great deal of fishing in anyway, so I just politely stepped back, and I don't regret it. Still got plenty of Nash gear. I'm good at fishing with single hook baits, so the bait thing doesn't bother me.
I mean, you know, look, I managed to catch fish to get myself in a position where people wanted you to promote their products. You have to do well and you have to catch fish, and I did that long before I ever got anything for free. And, you know, it was making up a bucket of particle or whatever, and you know, just putting a kilo of boilies in it or over the top. It's not all about getting hundreds or thousands of pounds worth of bait for nothing. You can still catch plenty of fish out there. And why it annoys me a bit when some people just got an automatic downer on people who've got a bait deal or any sort of sponsorship, and they just think, you know, they're going to fill that lake in and they've got an advantage over everybody else, and it's just not the case. You know, you've got that deal in the first place by catching fish, and you've obviously caught more than everyone else to be noticed, and you've done it on the same playing field as everybody else. So, and like I say, there isn't any, you know, nobody gets, it's probably four or five anglers in the country that get paid a wage to go fishing and have kind of unlimited free stuff. They're, you know, and I'm talking about the absolute top of the trees, your Terry Hearns, you know, that will actually receive money. Everybody else has to work for it. You have to, you know, which is essentially, if you're working on a stand at a show, it's like working in a shop. You know, it's not glamorous. It's you know, it's a day's graft or 2 days graft.
It's certainly not glamorous being asked to tie up a Trodrig 83 times in a weekend.
No, or you know, spend 3 hours loading a van at the end of the Sunday, or, you know, it's you're working. It's as simple as that, and nothing's for nothing. So, what else have we seen on the net?
It's on the net. It must be true.
Yeah, should we cover another Lewis, a friend of yours, I believe?
Yes, Lewis Clayton from Fat Fish Clothing. He's a northerner. He's digging a lake at the back of his house. Him and his parents own an old farmhouse, I think, and they've got a bit of land at the back. And for a couple of years, they've been digging this lake out in stages, and they seem to have had a real good go this year with a view to getting it fixed. I've seen the pictures on Facebook and stuff. And they've cleared a load of trees and were going to burn them in the field opposite, and did, and had some sort of backdraft, some sort of major blow where the wind's changed, and he's basically got a face full of flames that set his body on fire.
Ow
indeed. Yeah, I've seen the pictures on Facebook. You may have seen them, he's been posting them up every day. There's pictures that he's described as torture. He's basically very lucky. He seems to have burnt his head, face, arms. They say it's quite a common injury, I think, when this happens, and they say people usually lose their sight or die. I don't know how he's put the flames out, because I've not spoke to him, but I know he was in a bad way. He was airlifted to Withenshaw Hospital, and we obviously wish him a speedy recovery. He's only been in there 4 days, and he does seem to be improving. I think they give him these, he calls them torture baths, where I think they bathe him in stuff, and then I think they have to pick the dead skin off afterwards and keep him wrapped in cling film. There's all sorts of stuff. He's been posting it regularly in stages. So if you are friends with him, you've probably seen it, but it's pretty gory.
Yeah, I've seen some of the pictures and, well, I don't envy him one bit and wish him a speedy recovery.
Yep, we wouldn't have mentioned it if he hadn't have posted it all over Facebook, but he had his first session on Dinton. I know him and a few of the other Northern guys got a Dinton Pastures ticket this year, and I know he had his first fish last week, so I expect he was super keen to get back. And obviously, this has thrown a spanner in the works, but they're saying he's going to make a full recovery, so we hope he does, and wish him the best.
Yep, certainly can, and there's something else that caught my eye. And
it's on the net. It must be true.
In my own opinion, I think it's a bit overdue as well. There's some Ali Hamidi saying new direction for thinking tackle announced.
Well, they're on like the 10th season now, aren't they? So
this will be the 10th of filming.
I saw some of Tom Dove's pictures that he's been putting up this week, and it's a place that I've really fancied visiting since Euro Aqua came on the scene. All those big carp that are believed to have come from Lake Ballaton, which is just an inland sea. I've looking into doing foreign trips this year, and it's a place right at the top of my list. And then I see all the Corder guys tipped up there.
Yeah, I was looking at it. 592 square kilometres. It's larger than the Isle of Wight.
Yeah, it's about 150,000 acres, I think. I read. I've had a few scans and look at the fishing on there. It doesn't seem expensive.
Good, apart from getting there.
Yeah, obviously, it's while I drove through Hungary when I did that epic Romania trip the other year. Hungary was the last country before Romania, so, and we did about 8 hours through Romania, so I'm guessing it's 10 hours short, a good 24 hours driving anyway, a long way.
Yeah, that's why you want to go out with two or three of you and take the driving in shifts, I suppose.
Yeah, or you could stop halfway maybe, but it didn't look expensive. The website I found, I did a quick conversion on the currency rate, and it looked like it was about 40 quid for 10 days fishing, another 7 quid for a boat permit, which I assume you need just to use a dinghy or roll the baits out or whatever.
Yeah, something like that size, you're going to have to go out in a boat to reach your near margin.
Yeah, it looked ace, and they had quite a few fish. I'm looking forward to seeing it. I didn't see any super monsters. It looked like an upper 30-ish was the biggest fish that they caught on the last day, I think. But it's just sold it to me. I already wanted to go once I saw their kind of picture documentary of the trip. They were just saying it was amazing. Tom kept posting, you know, it's unbelievable. You just don't know if it rips off. I'm sure there's 30 kilo plus fish in there.
Oh, it's what you don't know is in a lake like that. There could be anything.
Yeah, for sure. I think it's fished commercially with nets, the impression I get. So, you know, people eat out of it. Obviously, carp's a dish over there, so I'm assuming, you know, that they regularly get swiped. But Lord knows how many fish there are in there in the first place.
No, and netting a lake like that, I don't think they're even going to get a fraction of the fish. Because you know what carp are like? They like any sort of structure, and you can't drag net through when there's underground boulders and bars. And, well, there won't be bars, it's not man-made, but, you know, there'll be boulders, there'll be ups and downs all over the place, I'm assuming.
I'm looking forward to the new season of Thinking Tackle, if it's going to be more of this sort of fishing.
Yeah, what I've got here says it'll be more focused on the adventure aspect of carp angling with fewer technical segments.
Yeah, I think that'd be interesting. Certainly excite me.
Yeah, there's several episodes already planned in exotic locations in search of the world's biggest carp.
I see that they've also confirmed series 2 of the Big Fish Off as well.
Yeah, they have. I've noticed on Twitter, Ali has been tweeting all these random celebrities trying to get them interested. I don't know who is going to be on it, but it will be good, whatever they do.
Yeah, I think they've confirmed a couple now. They confirmed a couple on stage at the Northern Angling Show. There was an all-female one. I forget which one's now. One of the Olympic people, might have been Jessica Ennis or someone like that.
Good Yorkshire lass.
Yeah, I think I could be wrong. But yeah, they do seem to be going places on the sort of TV side of it.
Yeah. Ryan, you mentioned the Big Fish Off. I think I was going to mention this on the last one, but totally forgot. But it's certainly having the desired effects. There was one fella coming to the tackle shop with his young lad. And the fella had never been fishing before, but his young lad had watched the Big Fish Off and wanted to go fishing. So we kitted him out.
Oh, that's good. It's, I mean, it, you know, it wasn't aimed at a serious angle. It was an entertainment program, and it's a good thing that if it's getting people into fishing.
Yeah, it's you know, I've seen firsthand its effect, and it's working. It was a lovely fellow as well, and a very, very excitable young kid.
I see Simon Crow has been having it right off on the Church Lake.
It's on the net. It must be true.
He certainly have Kev Nash's Church Lake. He's had quite a few fish, including one called Penny Scale at 48.6, an old friend of yours, I believe.
Yeah, I caught that one with my 240s in November, I think it was. I'd one at like, I did a 3-night session, I'd one at 8 at night, another at 8 in the morning, and both sort of 41 poundish, and one of them was that Penny Scale, which is a cracking fish.
Yeah, it did look a lovely clean, almost leather, didn't it?
Yeah, with just like one sort of golden scale the size of a penny on one side.
Yeah, and he's topped it off. He also had the 4x4 fish, which I believe is the biggest in the lake at the minute, at 56.12, a new UK PB for him.
I had a personal encounter with that fish. It's an absolutely cracking fish, and I would love to catch it. But I was doing a feature for Carp TV, I think the very first one that I did, and it was being filmed on there. It must have been May, June, because I remember it being really warm. I got burnt, but I was waiting for Nick and Joe to turn up with the cameras, and I found that 4x4 in one of the corners, and I was just pre-baiting it. I knew I couldn't start fishing for it because they were about to turn up. I think they were already in the office chatting to Kevin. They were about to walk up, so the plan was to just keep flicking baits in there, just try and hold it there without fishing for it, spend 2-3 hours doing the Carp TV stuff and then go and catch it. And I was dying to put a rod in, and I kept stopping the filming to go back and check it was there. And sod's law, once we'd all finished, it had long gone and never saw it again. But I mean, it was like 4 foot from the bank, could virtually touch it. And just seeing those big scales on its side, where it gets its name from, the 4x4. And it was a low 50 at the time, but it was a 50. And I just feel like I've got unfinished business with that fish. He had another 40 as well, and one called the Lizard, which not the greatest looking thing. It's like a real long common with a pointy tail. It's right, two-tone, funny looking fish. That was my first 40 out of there, I think, a good few years ago now. It's never really changed in weight. It just sort of stays at the low 40 mark. And I think, I don't know how many fish he had in total. I'm sure Alan will tell us later when he's on the show. But what a session it was, you know, like, 240s and the biggest fish in the lake at 56. I mean, he's hammering it.
Yeah, he's done well. Well, he's a brilliant angler. I've fished alongside him on the Mester Syndicate the other year, and he's just non-stop effort. You know, effort and intensity pretty much describes his fishing. But also, while we're on there, let's talk a bit about the Church Lake, because a lot of people now, you know, the haters will come out and say, oh, it's Kev Nash's pets and they're easy. I've been there once. I had a 3-night session and I caught absolutely nothing, as did the 5 other people on the lake.
It's a small lake, and smaller lakes that are pressured, and it is pressured. There's 4 or 5 people on there every week of the year, right up to the winter. It closes at spawning time, but that's about it. But these anglers are not just any old like guy turning up. These are the top anglers in the country, because it's generally people that are involved in the fishing business that get to fish it. He does a few competitions and stuff, you know, so that, like, you know, pleasure anglers do get the opportunity to fish it. He does competitions at the shows and stuff and on Facebook, but generally it's people in the trade, so it, you know, it's reps that are obviously, you know, hardcore into the fishing scene, shop owners, you know, people involved with Nash, all your magazine editors and consultants doing features, and you know, it's very, very good anglers fishing it week in, week out on a small lake where fish are, you know, react to pressure a lot more than a big lake, and it's a tough lake.
Yeah, and while I was there, they had, I don't know exactly the reason, but one corner of the lake was out of bounds.
Yeah.
Guess where all the fish were?
Yeah, and actually for a couple of years, he wanted to give them, when the lake was getting busier, he wanted to give them a safe haven, you know, somewhere they could kind of get away from the pressure.
It worked.
Yeah, as we know, if you give fish somewhere that's safe, why would they ever come out of it?
Yeah, but do you know what my remaining memory of that trip is?
Yeah.
Not the Church Lake, but being stood on the end of the Copse Lake, just looking over. And this one of these commons came into view, and it was the longest fish I have ever seen. I mean, the water was quite coloured, and it came. It was so close in.
Yeah, it's 4 foot long, isn't it? It's that long common that used to be on the front cover of Nash's catalogue years ago.
Yeah, it was enormous. I mean, if my eyes weren't popping out then this mirror saddled up along the side of it, and that was the widest fish I have ever seen. My eyes were out on stalks. I could have jumped in and rode it round the lake.
I forget what it's called, the biggest mirror in there.
Emperor or something like that?
Emperor's a big common, I think. The mirrors, the one Holmesy had on one of the Nash DVDs, he had it at 61 or something. But it's been up near £70, that fish, I think. I don't know how big it is now.
Yeah, I wouldn't like to put a guess of weight on. It was just enormous. But the biggest fish I've seen on the bank is a fat lady at a capture of 53-odd pound. And this fish was a lot bigger.
Yeah, it's a ridiculous place. I hope one day we get a chance to fish it, but Kev likes keeping that one to himself.
I don't blame him. He's extending it at the minute, isn't he?
Yeah, it's bigger. Well, I'm sure we'll get all the info off Alan later on about the lakes.
Yeah.
One thing that still keeps cropping up on the net...
It's on the net. It must be true.
...is this debate over the key bait. You know, this $14.99 a kilo bait seems to have just upset everybody. People seem to think that it's personally offended them because there's a bait out there that costs 15 quid. You know, I've got involved a little bit on the debates. It's on Kevin's page, and we know he likes to get stuck in with debates. You know, he's not one to back down, and he truly believes in it. You know, you don't have to buy a £15 bait. He sells other baits at a standard prices, same as everyone else, but people have just got a be in a bonnet about this bait, because I think it's because he's kind of said it will select bigger fish. I mean, that's the thing that people have took exception to, and people have got no intention of using it, just want to argue the toss that some baits, you know, it's rubbish, they're 5 quid bait, or catch the same fish that a more expensive bait, and it's kind of been made into a big deal about because of the price. And then you're an idiot if you don't think that some baits select different fish to other baits. Like, you know, match guys do it from the off. You know, they'll feed for the smaller fish and then feed pellets and corn for the bigger fish later on. You know, if that happens, then why wouldn't some boilies select bigger fish than other boilies? It's happened to me on a personal note. I did put this in Kev's in the thread. But when I used to fish the wire, which was a lake you could get multiple bites on when you got it right, I had many different experiences of different baits out fishing other baits. I know when I first we used to catch a lot of fish on hemp and corn on there, you know, fish just like fake maize and plastic corn fished over a big bucket of hemp and corn, and I would always fish that on one of the rods. Sometimes I'd have two rods over it, and then I'd have a third rod off to the side just on boilies, and quite often the hemp and corn rod would outfish the other rod 5-1, but the biggest fish on the session would always be off the boilie rod. And then I also found it with different types of boilies. So before I was with Nash, this is a long time ago now, maybe 15 years, I remember fishing Mainline's NRG, which was their like latest bait, and the wire used to fish really well on the Assassinate and Activate, so I naturally tried the NRG when that came out. And I was using Nutribait's trigger as well, because I just used to buy a kilo of each from the shop on the way fishing, like sort of everyone does. And the same thing happened over two or three sessions, where the NRG would outfish the trigger like 4 or 5-1, and then but the biggest fish would be on the trigger every time. The NRG used to outfish it, and I would swap them over. You know, I'd put the other bait on the spot. And it's happened so many times to me over the years. I don't need convincing that some baits will select bigger fish than others. The other one was Nashy's Monster Pursuit, which when Terry Hearn was with Nashy, I mean, a few younger people listening to this probably don't even know that Terry was originally with Nash. And he had the story goes, he had his favourite kind of boilie recipe that he took with him kind of everywhere he goes. And that was the foundation of the Monster Pursuit that Gary made. And it was done because Terry reckoned it selected bigger fish. It was a big fish bait. It might not capture as many, but, you know, the big uns liked it. And, you know, that's Terry Hearn is the encyclopedia of, of modern day carp fishing.
Yeah, here's another one. Do you remember back on when we were on St Ives Lagoon chasing the fat lady around?
Yeah.
Do you remember how many fish actually got caught on yellow pineapple pop-ups from there?
Except the lady.
How many times did she get caught on either Scopex squid or Monster Pursuit?
Yeah, I'd forgotten about that, actually. All the top rods on there that used to catch a ridiculous amount of fish, bearing in mind the lady like made up a quarter of all the captures during the
year at least.
Yeah, and there were some guys on there that used the yellow pop-ups, extremely efficient anglers that would catch 15 fish a season, which is ridiculous when there's a stock of 18 in there, but never caught the lady. They would keep catching other fish and they never caught the lady. And we always used to say it's the pineapple, it's the yellow pop-ups, you know, it's fish love them, but for some reason the lady would always come out on a feed bait.
Yeah, I certainly had on a feed bait. She was my third bite from there. I think, was it yours, fifth or sixth?
Yeah, I think. Yeah, I caught it in the winter. I'm sure we've gone over this one already.
Yeah, I do remember it quite well, because I was 1st of August that year and you were 1st of November, £12 bigger.
Yeah, that's right. And it came out in between as well, didn't it, at decent 50s?
Yeah, I think it was about 2 or 3 weeks before you nailed her.
Yeah, but cracking fish, that one. That was another one to see in the flesh. It was ridiculous. 56, yeah. Something, I think I had it at, and I mean, what a unit.
Yeah, but getting back to what started all this conversation is all the key haters. They're just getting boring now. Either buy it and try it, or just don't moan about it. It's something that you're never going to use.
I made the analogy, you know, how many of them are writing to Rolls-Royce complaining about the price of Rolls-Royces? You're never going to buy one, so why would it ever bother you? If you're totally happy with your £4 a kilo bait or using your 29p sweet corn, then why would you moan about something that's you're never going to use? It's just ridiculous logic.
It is. Anyway, we're going on about the key a bit too much as well now. Should we move on?
Probably our most requested guest over the last few weeks, Mr. Alan Blair.
Well, thank you, Jamie. Thanks for having me, mate.
No worries. You were always on our list anyway, as I know we have many sort of philosophical chats and fishing chats and stuff about everything. And so you were definitely on the list. But this last 2 weeks, really, every time we've asked who you want to see, your name and Ollie obviously is associated with you these days because of the Urban Banks photography, I think.
I'm kind of in a room on my own.
How obviously, for people who don't know, Urban Banks is a series. It's something you created, really, isn't it? Was it your idea from scratch?
No, it wasn't anyone's idea, mate. And I mean that it was actually goes back to the era of Rich Wilby. You know, it went back to the time when a lot of the sort of manufacturers in the industry were on the lookout for decent photographers, journalists and videographers. So we sort of grabbed hold of Rich Wilby, and he was a pleasure to work with. And we just went out for an afternoon on Grand Union Canal, and sort of Winston had given him the brief beforehand, make sure you film something. And he did. And yeah, Winston got hold of it, turned it into this little clip that we kind of called Urban Banks. And it really stemmed from that, mate. It was a bit of a, you know, it wasn't a sort of sit round a table discussion, I know, let's do this thing, but it just sort of naturally happened, mate.
And it's kind of started a craze around the country, you know, the spelling the Banks with the X. I see it absolutely everywhere now. which is good, I think, because it's made people want to fish, you know, like previously ignored bits of water just for the urban scenery.
Yeah, for sure, mate. I think one thing I've taken out of it, you know, yes, it has been well received and I get a lot of love for it, but I think one of the nicest things I get from it is, you know, not necessarily good anglers, but anglers with plenty of experience and good anglers, but anglers that have been doing it a long time have watched it, and it's kind of made them maybe change their styles a little bit. They might have got set in a way of sort of big water syndicate fishing, and actually sort of watching the episodes and the fact that a lot of the time we're only catching small fish in unusual locations. It's inspired them to sort of change, you know, what they're doing, even though they've been doing it for sort of 10, 20, 30 years. It's really nice.
Yeah, and they, they're like, they're not necessarily the massive fish, you know, in canals and rivers and stuff, but quite often there's a bit of history behind them. You know, you look at the sort of surroundings they've been living in, and, you know, just to catch a right old looking black thing, you know, it's an extra buzz in itself rather than the size.
Yeah, for sure, mate. You know, every carp we catch, they've all got a story to tell, but I'm particularly interested in the ones that these carp have got to tell, you know. As much as I'm interested when I'm there looking at the various buildings and, you know, the setting and the people I'm meeting in those sort of places, I'm so intrigued about what those carp do down there in those mad locations. Yeah, it's mad.
What was it like in the dam? Did you find any sort of urban-y resorts over there?
Jay, we've been to Dan both, you know. It's an amazing place. We just didn't have long enough, mate. It's mad. There's so much water there, same as all of Holland, really. We were very limited with time. The water temperature, I can make all the excuses under the sun, the water temperatures were really low, and the lads actually said, you're wasting your time. But I did it, mate. I went for one night, bang, in the centre of Dan, and I ended up catching 3 bream, which, you know, I never mind when I catch anything. So for me, it was a massive result in itself. Every time that bite line went off, I was buzzing, mate. Like, you didn't know if it would be a carp or not. And yeah, I did maybe 8-10 hours in total. Sort of went out and had a meal with a few friends in Amsterdam. And then I went and got the rods out of my own, mate. And in fairness, Jay, like, a lot of people ask me, they say, you know, if you ever had any sort of bad experiences, tackle stolen, etc. And to this day, I never, ever once had. But that night in Dan was definitely the hairiest night I've done. So sure, mate, like, it just, yeah, it was. Big gangs of sort of Turks and, you know, Eastern Europeans and that, and I was sort of all on my own in uncharted territory, so to speak. But yeah, it was a wicked buzz, mate, and I'll be going back very soon.
Did you get approached over there?
Nah, because again, when people ask me that question, have you ever had any bother, have you, I'm pretty shrewd about where I position myself, you know. I'll look for somewhere where I can get a little bit tucked away, and that, so I sort of, I'd actually drove to my spot, you know, and that's one of the beauties of a lot of this urban fishing. I'm driving around Amsterdam. This is about probably 1:30, 2 in the morning, looking for a suitable parking spot. And yeah, found somewhere that took my fancy with regards to the fishing angle as well. And sort of position, I just slept under the stars, got my bed in sort of behind my van. But it was mad busy all night, mate, as you can imagine. Lots of people, you know, all through all the hours of the evening. But yeah, wicked place, really cool.
What fish are in those, you know, the sort of dirty canals that run right through the centre of the red light and all the sort of main, you know, touristy areas of Dam?
I wouldn't stereotypicalise this just to Amsterdam. You know, I think if you look at the likes of Paris, well, all the big cities and towns right across Europe, you know, you are fishing for big fish. You've got a chance of a big fish, Jay. There's carp, you know, well in excess of 40 pounds. I had a look at some park lakes in central Amsterdam the following day, and, you know, that's done fish to high 40s, even possibly low 50s. Very big Zander. You know, you're talking like 16, 18, 20, maybe 20 pounds Zander, big shoals of bream, tench, everything really, mate. You know, just like anywhere, you don't really know, you know, what could sort of pull the float under or set the bite line off next.
I always wondered if there was fish in those main canals that you see all the time, and they're filthy and tourists are getting shoved in them at 3 o'clock in the morning. But, but you reckon there's definitely fish in those, even the most central ones?
1,000%. You know, what was against me was the weather and the water temperature. You know, I've spoke to a good friend, Mark Hoffman, who actually lives in Amsterdam, and he said countless times he's been out and there'll be people throwing burgers and chips over edge and they will be just slurping it up off the surface, bro. That's a bit of me, mate. Central Amsterdam. Let's say 16, 18 degrees air temperature, a nice warm day before, and just go and get a few cheeseburgers in and go and find the carp.
Herrig burger, yeah, I like it. So where did your fishing actually start? I mean, was it usual story, young kid?
Yeah, it's a typical angler. I was blessed that my father went fishing, and he was so kind in that he took me every weekend. Yeah, bar a few, every year, every weekend we'd be out fishing together at some point. A lot of fly fishing. Grew up doing a lot of fly fishing on the big reservoirs, a lot of river fishing, canal fishing, and the Park Lakes and Milton Keynes where I grew up. You know, back then, Jay, I grew up in the era of commercial fisheries. They'd just sort of really started booming. So if I wasn't on the river or a canal, I'd be down at a sort of 5-7 pound a day commercial. And that's where my carp fishing started, you know. I'm 31. I can't proclaim to be, you know, in these sort of 70s eras or 80s eras where things were certainly a lot different to when I grew up fishing. When I started going carp fishing, I was catching like 100 carp a day. You know, and they range between sort of 8 ounces and 15, 16 pounds, you know, and that went on for many, many years, mate.
Would you say you're an all-round angler or predominantly a carp angler?
I think because of my work now, I'm lucky that I work for Nash. I do an awful lot of carp fishing. Would it be different? It probably would, mate. If I didn't work here, I'd probably spend more time multi-species fishing, although in fairness, I still do plenty of it. I really do like catching everything. Really do, you know. I caught my first mullet at the weekend on a fly rod, which is a massive achievement for me, and it gave me a real good buzz, and yeah, I just love fishing.
I've seen that you take Littlin out with you a few times. I've seen some of the pictures since you've obviously got you get married soon, you've got a new family. And it doesn't really stop the fishing?
She's so good, Chloe. Well, you've met her, mate, a few times. It's never been any different, Joe. We've been together 10 years this year, and I've always gone fishing a lot. I've always worked hard, and I've always juggled that in amongst my social life and her. And now the kids, you know, got another one on the way in November, which I'm mad excited about. We're going to be a fishing family, mate, like you. You've just got your new whip. I look forward to the day I can go and get a nice camper van and head off across Europe on adventures, mate, with the family, more importantly. You know, I think that's a really special thing to do.
Yeah, definitely. Obviously Chloe works within the industry as well, which is at least she understands the kind of passion and that you have to do it as well for work. Yeah. So you've got double excuse, you know. I say to my missus, we're going on a fishing holiday. She's like, what?
Yeah, but you're in the industry. Don't you ever use that as well, Jay, when you're going fishing? Oh, it's work.
Of course, yeah. Yeah, I've got to go. I've got to go so many times a year, and this is one of them. Yeah, I mean, we all have to juggle, don't we? It's nice that we can earn a living out of, you know, something we love, which is important. There's a lot of people that have to, you know, work jobs that they hate being in, and, you know, we are privileged to be doing something that we're interested in and love.
Yeah, for sure, mate. I feel very lucky. I say lucky. I've had to work extremely hard to get where I am, but I do feel lucky and honoured to, you know, have a job in an industry. Like, I look at my mum and dad, Jay, man. They've worked for sort of the best part of 40 years, and especially my dad. He's worked so hard, but he hates it every day. He goes to work, he earns a good wage, but he doesn't enjoy it, mate. And for that reason, I feel blessed to be able to go and work in the fishing tackle industry, which is my love, you know.
Were you always kind of addicted to fishing? I know you obviously did fishery management course and went on to become a tutor. Like, was it always fishing from when you started?
Like, I'm a bit of a one-trick pony, Jay. Like, other than a bit of music, I can't really do anything else. I'm not very good at any sports. Like, it's just been fishing, and that is definitely down to my dad. Like, with him taking me out literally every weekend, all summer holiday, sometimes like after school, it's what I did. My little brother, for example, he's brilliant at football, but that's because he went down the park and played football every day in the summer holidays, you know. And it's just me, mate. I got tired of it. I knocked it on the head for a little while, you know, those years when everything gets a little bit out of hand and like the weeks aren't even there anymore. It's just one big party. Life was just one big roller coaster of a party. And that went on for sort of for 3 years, I suppose, when I was at college and stuff. And I didn't do a lot of fishing then. And then when I sort of left college and actually went into proper full-time work, it just came back quickly. And, you know, I'd say I've fished pretty much 24 years of my life, you know, pretty relentlessly hard.
Yeah, I mean, you'd naturally have breaks because of, you know, life circumstance and whatever. I've had breaks for a couple of years, you know, 3 or 4 times over 30 years, but it never goes fishing, does it? It's always in the blood.
Sucked back in, mate. And I think, you know, I mentioned the football and any other sportsman, you know, they are great, but there will come a point in your career when, for whatever reason, age or illness, or you won't be able to carry on that sport. Whereas with fishing, okay, maybe it shouldn't be classed as a true sport, but with fishing, I will do it forever. Yeah. I will do it right until the bitter end in some way, shape or form. I'll be out there on the bank, you know, having a lovely time catching fish. Yeah, it's an awesome thing to do.
How did you meet Kev then? How did you come about to, you know, be pretty much the head honcho at Nash?
Kev, I met Kev, well, I must have been about, probably about 8 or 9 years ago now, and it came about because I was a lecturer at Shuttleworth College in Bedfordshire, and we used to take students away on work experience, and it could be various places, Linear Fishery or Fish Farms, or one of the places was Kevin's French Lake, Cavignac, and I used to take big groups of students over there, sort of 16 students on my own, you know, bearing in mind a good percentage of these students were older than me, and we used to smash it right, fly, you know, we'd be over there netting or building swims or pulling lilies, whatever it was, you know, if we were there for a week, 10 days, I'd just work everyone so hard, get them all motivated, get the tunes on, get the drum bass going, and we just worked really hard. And this went on for a couple of years until one day Kev was like, I'd really like to meet you properly, and he invited me down, and I didn't even really sort of know at the time that it was an interview as such. I thought it was more of a have a chat kind of thing. But yeah, about 2.5 hours later, I left his office, you know, a little bit shaky, a little bit like, what the hell just happened there? But he offered me a job, of which I took. And yeah, I've been here ever since.
Was that a tough decision, obviously, leaving a career as a college tutor?
Not really, mate. I understand risks, and if, you know, sometimes in life you need to take certain risks to get you to places, and I don't even think it was a risky one, Jay. Yes, I had a cushy job, and if I'd have stuck at it, I'd have been on a nice teacher's pension, and I'd have had my sort of 6 week summer, but it weren't me, mate. You know, I thoroughly enjoyed it. It was a great experience. I hope I've helped, you know, a number of people along the way in those sort of few years I did it, but, you know, yeah, bit too regimented, bit too political. Yeah, no, I'm definitely in the right place.
It kind of stood you instead, didn't it? Everything happens for a reason. And obviously you surrounded yourself with kind of students and people that you trusted from Shuttleworth, and they're kind of your core team at Nash, aren't they?
Yeah, I don't know how many people have come down since I've left. A lot, Jamie, a lot. Every year we give sort of 2, 3, 4 kids an opportunity from that college and some of the other colleges, the opportunity to come and do their work experience. And if they're good, we'll take them on, mate. We will take them on. Yeah, you know, people like Matt Reed, he was obviously here for even longer than I was at one point. Tom Ditch. Yeah, there's been a few very good lads that have come from that college that, you know, have worked here and then moved on to do other things, or, you know, are still here to this day, mate.
What was most of the work experience? Was it on the lakes up there at the church?
What, when the students have been down?
Yeah, well, when you first used to come up with, you know, when you were still a tutor, I mean, did you ever used to come up and know the full sort of, full script with the church and everything?
Yeah, when the kids used to come, no, we only ever went to the French Lake with regards to me taking students there, but whenever we have kids down here from the colleges, it could be anything really, mate. I like them to experience various parts of the business, so they might spend a few days in the warehouse, they might go to the bait factory, they might get involved in some design work or a bit of marketing, or get outside and work on the lakes and the estate and stuff.
I was thinking more personally, if I was a sort of a young kid going to stay and work at Nash's for a week, and you know, you stumble on one of them two lakes with all those fish in there, it'd just be, you know, I'd be blown away by it, you know, as a young impressionable kid. It'd be like,
yeah, sure,
all them sort of lumps swimming about in there. And, I mean, most people will know now, especially the church lake, what it contains, and it's kind of getting back to its heyday again, isn't it? I think Crowey's had some right lumps out of there this week.
He's had a good result. Yeah, he smashed it. I think he had 7 or 8 fish. He had a good time. Special place, Jay. You fished it yourself, mate, you know. I think the biggest thing that people are probably in disbelief about is that it is a proper carp water, and you can have some off times on there. You know, I've blanked. Have you blanked?
Yeah, in the winter.
You know, but people are in belief that it's some ultra easy place, and they come to your hand when you feed them, and you know, but it's a proper water, and if you get it good and you fish well, you're catching fish. If you don't, it can be a grueler, mate. But yeah, some very special fish in there, and plenty of them.
Have you had any opportunity to fish the other one?
I have. He let me have a go.
Yeah.
He's a legend, Kev, man. He's, you know, he just wants to catch this one fish, and I absolutely 100% respect him for it. But he did let me do a night with him the other night. It's his birthday, and we got a bottle of champagne in and some fish and chips, and I flicked some rods out with him, which was really, really nice. And I had one, Jay, but get this, mate. It was a baby, so it was born in there. So it can't be any more than sort of 11, 12 years old.
Yeah.
And it weighed 38 pounds 10 ounces.
No way.
And it was a pristine common, bruv. Yeah, never been caught before. Yeah, man, we were both sort of in disbelief. The lads come up in the morning, you know, no one could believe it. They've got this sort of characteristic. I don't know whether it's because it's a small water and there's maybe a few too many in there, or I don't know why, but they've got this almost tiny little deformation to their fins. It makes them look the bollocks, man, like just crinkle cut sort of heart-shaped tails and crinkle-cut dorsals, and it's one of those sort of major sort of wow, that's definitely a baby because it's got this, but a very impressive common. I have to ping you the bio, mate. Like, it's got a lot of potential, let's put it like that.
Yeah, and I just wish Kevin would hurry up and catch the big one.
You can have a go. Yeah, there's a few people that would like a go on there for sure, mate. I would love to catch that emperor. I've watched it feed on the riser pellet too many times and stuff, and stuff. Yeah, there's a few nice fish in there. Of course, the big one.
Is that the long common, the emperor? Is that the big common?
Yeah, there's two sort of particularly long commons. One's called the emperor, one's called the wood carving. They're both gorgeous. They both sort of both do 50 pounds. I think the emperor's done 59 before. Wow. Which is a hell of a fish, you know. So watching that taking riser pellet is certainly a sight to behold.
He's extended the lake as well, hasn't he? Has it got bigger now?
It's been so exciting the last sort of, I suppose, 10 months. I think you're aware we sort of managed to get hold of next door. That came up for sale, a house next door that had some land out the back. And we've built a brand new lake there. What was the house pond and the office pond, we've now joined that together to create one lake. Quite a wicked shape, you know, got a nice big channel with some shallow areas. We're going to use that for sort of growing fish on. And then the copse itself's been extended. We've taken out the bottom bay, desilted it. And it's all sort of coming together. It looks a bit sort of rough and ready at the moment, but you know, we've kind of missed this year to get the grass seed down. So we're going to do that in September when the sort of autumn rains come. But yeah, by this time next year, mate, it'll be a very beautiful place again, for sure.
Yeah, I need to start begging Kev. It's been 3 or 4 years since I've fished. Especially the way they're going in the church, they just seem to be shooting up again after they lost a few the other year.
Yeah, it's interesting that, mate. I did one of the urban banks we did over at Thurston Lake in Milton Keynes, and Milton Keynes Council and Milton Keynes Angling Club allowed me to fish sort of a section of the lake that hadn't been fishable for a couple of years. And I did a few hours on there, caught some fish, and ended up donating a fiver or a tenner, depending on how big they were, for each carp I caught. And then off the back of that, I offered up a sort of couple of day session on the church. And we ended up raising a couple of grand. It was really nice. And the lad who came up to do it, he had three or four fish actually, but he had two fish, Jamie, that had sort of, one of them had put on 9 pounds since its last capture, the other one had put on 6 pounds for its last, since its last capture. One was a new 50. And that is purely down to, you know, yes, it was incredibly sad when we lost the fish, and, you know, no one wants that to happen, of course, but all it does is it allows other ones to come through, you know, so there's certain fish in there that have just, you know, seen that opportunity to fill that biomass up, and they've got on the munch, mate.
Yeah, always happens when you lose a couple of big fish. It, you know, they come out of nowhere, don't they? Fish that haven't really grown that much for ages, they fly up to replace it. You mentioned Milton Keynes. I know you're up in Manchester not long back. Like, the Manchester one really seems to have... it was so photogenic, all the lights in the background. Some of the colours look like they were put on. But do you see, Ollie is an integral part of it as well with the photography that he's doing.
It's essential, mate. He says to me regularly, I'm like, should we go and do this? Oh, and like, you can fish with me. And he's like, no, it's your thing. It is not my thing. Like, it would be nothing without Ollie. It would be nothing without Winston. You know, it's definitely a three-way partnership. Yes, okay, I'm appearing in front of the camera more than the other two, but there's no way I can take the credit for it, and not those two lads as well, man.
I think part of the brand is the the visual photography, and obviously, you know, the videos, they come out, you know, there's a lot of editing gets involved, so they're not out that frequently, but the photos are going up weekly, and you don't need to catch, do you, as long as you get some great shots of rods or, you know, urban sort of decay.
You know, the thing is, mate, it's called fishing, it's not called catching, you know, and I blank a lot. Fact, you know, especially in the depths of winter, I'm still out there doing it. I'm still out there trying. And every time I go, we never go with the, you know, the thinking, oh, let's go and do a photo shoot or let's go out, because that's I'm going out to try and catch.
Yeah.
You know, and I put 110% into it. Manchester was definitely no exception. There was very little sleep. I think I fished 8 or 9 different spots in 3 days, over across sort of 4 or 5, 6, maybe 6 different venues. And the whole time, all I'm trying to do is get bite. Just, you know, I caught plenty of bream, and it wasn't until I visited a particular park lake on the final night that I managed to catch two, and it was the most incredible buzz ever, Jay. You know, we filmed it all. Reedy was with me. Reedy filmed it, and we're going to launch a video, and it's going to be sort of you might have to cut this out. It's going to be a look back on the Manchester session and the Amsterdam and Holland session in general of what happened in that. Because, yeah, I did. I managed to catch a couple of fish, but it wasn't enough to give the people what they want. You know, they want to see Urban Banks 8 or Urban Banks 9, and that needs to be something special. It needs to be something really special. So that's why we haven't sort of, yeah, bear in mind the lads are mad busy with the DVDs and stuff, but that's why we haven't launched another video, because we haven't got that special something to give the people yet, you know. But we will do a nice interview piece where I look back over Amsterdam and Manchester, what I got up to, what I caught and stuff.
Yeah, and those fish you caught out that part, like, what fish they were as well. I mean,
as a buzzing. I'm still buzzing now. Reedy's over there now anyway, Spenny.
I think he's fishing out there tonight. But yeah, they're just real history fish. And, you know, I didn't, you know, living in the Northwest, I didn't even know it existed.
So Manchester, yeah, at the moment you're seeing all the lovely photos that Ollie took. But there is a story behind it all. And it did end up with me catching a couple of really beautiful carp. So, yeah, special trip, mate. Even in Holland, you know, I didn't catch in Amsterdam, but the night previous we were in Utrecht, which I think is the second biggest city. And me and Ollie managed to catch one each. Yeah, they weren't massive. Mine was probably high double. But it's a carp rub, and it was like, just so, it's so rewarding, mate, you know. You know, Ollie's another one. His size really doesn't matter. Don't get me wrong, Joe. I'd have loved it to have been a 40-pounder, but the point of the matter is we still caught, and it just gives you a great sense of achievement, you know.
Are you going to try and get around the country, kind of all the urban towns?
Love to. It's just time, and I know that's a poor excuse, but the truth of the matter is, you know, I am on limited time, and so is Ollie and Winston and stuff. But what's coming up next? We're coming back to Manchester. There's no way I'm leaving that one. No Salford Keys are going to get fished. You know, I've said to George Phillips when I was down, I think it was George, but that is my target for the year, to catch a carp out of there. That's the only target I've got, Jay. I haven't got a syndicate lake I'm fishing. I haven't got a particular name fish I'm after. The only thing I want to achieve this year is to catch a belter out of Salford Keys.
Did you see that picture George put up with the bus in the background?
So jealous. Why do I live 3.5 hours away? Like,
that was so unreal.
It's a bit of me, Jay. It so suits my style of fishing. The water's tap water, you know, and I will just walk and walk and walk and walk, and I'll find them, and I'll find them, and I'll fish, and I'll fish until I catch something. And it really excites me, mate, because you just never know who's going to behind you when you're sort of playing that fish, or what sort of conversation you're going to strike up, or what amazing photo Ollie's going to take, you know, once it's on the bank. Yeah, can't wait.
And what about this sort of European towns? Obviously, when you've got trade shows and stuff, it's obvious to go fishing nearby. But are you going to plan any kind of foreign trips?
Yeah, so we'd definitely go back to Holland, just because it's such a cool place, mate, and we've got some great friends there. The next big one, really, with regards to Europe, is at the end of May, start of June, me and Ollie are going to go and do Eurobanks 2. So Eurobanks is really Urban Banks, but it's basically obviously shot in Europe. Last time we went sort of into Belgium and then down into France. This time we're going over into Eastern Europe. And we're probably, me and Ollie are still disputing this at the moment, because I like to do a million things, you know, try and cram it all in, where Ollie's a lot more of a realist and stuff. But I'd like to stop off in Germany for a night, then head into Austria, go and see the lads at Metropolis Car, spend sort of a good couple of days and a night with them, and then hopefully bring them with us, and we're going to head over to Slovenia and fish Lake Bled, do probably two or three nights there. And then I want to go Hideout Festival in Croatia. I want to try and see Ronnie Size, leave there, head up to Budapest, have a go on the Danube, and probably go to Cologne on the way home, hit up hospitality, and then get back to England. And I'm going to try and wrap all this up into about 8 days.
I'm guessing you're telling Chloe that this one's all work.
It's work, bro. It's work.
That sounds like a sick trip.
Yeah, really looking forward to it. Eurobanks too. Watch this space.
Have you had a look at Balaton down in Hungary, is it?
Amazing, mate. Really special bit of water. Know some guys, I think, actually control the fishing on one of the banks. Very interesting lake. Massive bit of water. Is that one on your tick list?
100%, possibly this year. Something about it, I really want to go. It's where all, I believe, allegedly, all this fish out of Euroacra have come out of there. Obviously, they've been fed up in Euroacra, and we know they've gone over 100 pounds. But I'd love to know what is the actual biggest fish that's been caught out of Balaton. Cause
not sure. I heard exactly the same thing. My boss, whenever I was doing the fisheries consultancy work, Chris, he's actually fished it a couple of times, and he knows people in the area and stuff. And he told me that they all came out in seine nets. So sort of commercial fishing. They're running these big nets through the lake, catching dinner. And every once in a while, they end up sort of netting one of these big carp. How big, I don't know. I would have thought they've caught them in nets to over 30 kilos. Interesting, very interesting.
So, so there's chances of 30 kilos plus, I'm guessing, you know, just during... just that thought of an unknown monster, you know, like we caught an 80-pounder or something bigger out of a lake that's 150,000 acres. For me, that's the ultimate for me, I think, and I really want to go, whether it's this year. The fishing's dead cheap as well. I found a site online last week, and a 10-day permit was about 40 quid, and another 10 or 7 quid for a boat permit for 10 days.
That's the only downside of this. Have you heard of Lake Bled?
No.
Yeah, mate, Google search it. It's to die for, Jamie. There's a church out on an island, and it's sort of uplit with purple lights. And, you know, at any one time, you can have a couple of hundred Japanese tourists behind you, but all snow-capped mountains, very deep lake. And again, you've got a half-decent chance of getting amongst some 30-kilo fish. But it's about 120 quid a day to fish it, 120 euros. Wow. Well, no, maybe it's three. Yeah, it's a lot of money, and... it's actually a trout fishery for the sort of Slovenian people, and they pay, I think, something like 10 euros a year to fish it, but they've obviously monopolised on us carp anglers and top dollar. But in my opinion, worth every penny for a couple of days fishing.
Wow, that's crazy. Yeah, I think that's a bit of me now. That I can't see me doing much more UK syndicate fishing, you know, any little... secret gems that we find, then you might find me sneaking around on. But actual syndicate fishing, I just want to go abroad and fish some of these lakes that people have been doing for 25 years. You know, it's hardly groundbreaking because people have been doing it, but I feel like I need to do it now.
You know, when you get in the van and then you go off, it'll be a big adventure.
I always felt like I missed out on it when I was young, you know, reading the likes of Crowley and Briggsy and those sort of guys travelling and Husey for, you know, a long time. And then, like I say, it's not really pioneering now, but although there are lakes undiscovered, I mean, who on earth could know what's in Balaton or Lake Bled, you know, a lake that size? I mean, nobody knows what's in there, do they?
Not for sure, mate. So there's always that element of mystique about it. Did you did it get that way with you then, Jay? You know, you've caught some massive fish from the circuit waters. Did you find yourself in a rut at points where you thought, you know, this is not like fun anymore?
Yeah, kind of. The last lake I fished, Stone Acres, it brought that home to me. You know,
get on the fishing over other anglers' bait.
Yeah, just. General stress, other anglers. It wasn't pleasurable, And you know, I was like, I don't really care what fish are in there. Nothing's worth this stress.
Yeah.
So, I don't know, and it's just me getting old. Probably I'm 42, 43 now.
Yeah, but it's exactly how I feel, Jamie. I haven't had a ticket for a couple of years now anywhere because I'll make the sacrifices, and that sacrifice is not having those 18 fish and stuff, but it's, I always enjoy myself now. I never go and think, oh, if only I could get on that area, you know, or if only like someone hadn't been in here for 3 days before me. And I don't like that part of it. I like turning up and it's all fresh and you do your own thing and make your own rules.
The problem is, I've found, is I'm not quite as focused because I don't really have anywhere to go like next week or the week after. That kind of drive, that hunting drive. Yeah, I definitely miss it. I mean, I've got a bit of a sort of sneaky water that's uncharted territory. That's where I'm going to be sort of for the next 2 months whenever I can fish. Which is great because you're not competing against anybody, you know, although you're trying not to get caught. You're not competing against other anglers, you know, and I don't really know what's in there. I've only had small fish so far. There might not be anything significant in there, to be honest. I hope there is. It's like when I do just want to go fishing, it's a day ticket late, which is kind of the opposite extreme to a syndicate water. And there's some great day tickets about, and I've never really fished them, so I'm quite enjoying just dropping on. But I feel like I'm just enjoying being there as opposed to really trying to, you know, fish my hardest. I'm struggling to get motivated without having an actual purpose. I need a goal, I think.
Yeah, it's different for different people, isn't it? I'm exactly the same as you. I've just got to set one on that day. You know, I've got to give myself a task on that day or on that session and just trying to achieve that, as opposed to maybe something a bit more longer term over a campaign. But I'll do a bit on the river, mate, when it starts. That'll be a sort of a little mini campaign. So a bit like you with this pit, you'll only fish it for a couple of months and then move on. You know, I'll have a good crack on the river again this year.
Well, I watched the social on the new DVD box set. Teliax looked amazing. Have you been before?
Yeah, I went 2 years previously. We went out again with work colleagues. Very special lake. You know, he's got a lot of big fish in there. And me and Kev have spoke about it at length. And I think it's because he's got this influx of fresh water coming through it, Jay. You know, it gets a little flush out. It's a bit like a fish tank at home. You know, you've got to give it a water change. And if you give it a water change, your fish are healthy. And I think Teliax is probably a perfect example of that. Of course, it's getting a lot of bait, you know, good quality bait and stuff. But I think a lot of why Teliax is such an incredible French carp fishery is because of this sort of fresh influx of water. It's a wicked place. You should go, Jay. There should be another one on your list, mate.
Have you not got to book the whole lake? Have you got to find a load of people to go with?
You can drop on trips. For example, when we pulled off, there was a group of lads from up north had sort of got together and booked the trip. But you can book the lake, or we should look at doing it. You know, we should look at doing it. They're full, like, for a couple of years. Nice lake, comfortable fishing, mate. Nice sort of break from, you know, what you're going to be getting up to over the next few weeks.
It really worked on the video as well, I think. It kind of captured the social element, you know. It was from a two or three different groups' perspective, all going as Nash, all going, you know, with the same purpose to have the crack. But it was great, I think, the way it came across.
Yeah, no, it was. It was a great week, you know. Of course, Ollie's Common, massive, massive highlight. But I think, you know, and I caught a PB. You know, that was my PB fit carp. But for me, without a doubt, the highlight of the week was watching, like, Mike and Kurt. You know, they'd never been to France before, you know. So just their whole excitement when they turned up, and, you know, they hadn't been to sleep. And especially as they caught a lot of nice fish as well. That was really cool, mate, to see a couple of lads that, you know, hadn't done it before, how much they enjoyed it. Yeah, it was great, mate. Thoroughly enjoyed it. I hope to get back there soon.
There might have been other companies that do it, but it was Nash, the first people that I saw kind of do that free DVD. You know, instead of, I remember having a chat with Kevin, he was saying, you know, spending the same money on a catalogue is what we can make a DVD and put it out there for free. And it's kind of adapting with the modern technology. People want to watch stuff, you know. YouTube's massive, and the Nash TV thing, I think, really showed, like, you're moving with the times. But he was kind of behind the idea for this new one of doing it in a box set. I think was a brilliant idea.
It wouldn't have been us at the first. It was definitely Corda were the first. Corda started the whole promotional DVD thing.
What, the free ones?
Yeah, for sure. And without a doubt, it is a massive marketing tool. You know, it's just how you dress that up. And I think as a company, we sit there and we discuss, you know, how we're going to do it. And we want to just give something back. You know, of course, we need to try and promote our equipment and our tackle and our bait throughout it, but we want to make it an enjoyable watch. We want people to sit down and watch it and enjoy it and want to go fishing, and thus hopefully, you know, want to use the equipment that we use and stuff. So yeah, we sit down, me, Ollie, Winston, Kev, and we discuss possible, you know, we plan, mate. You know, Jay, better than anyone. You've done doing the shows and the nightclub events and stuff. You sit there, you bounce ideas around until you've got a formula that you think, you know, is watchable and workable, and then you get out there and get it done.
One of the new products that doesn't kind of keep out the news at the minute is the key bait. People are still having debates on Facebook about that.
It's brilliant, Ralph. It's brilliant. You know, I won't go into too much, but to me, it's dead simple. Dead simple. You go to Tesco's, you can buy a $2.99 lasagna, or you can buy a $5.99 lasagna. You know, they're both lasagnas, but one of them tastes better than the other, and one of them costs more than the other. And that's my simple philosophy on it. I have not got a clue what's in the bait. I've been involved in it all right from conception, but not with regards to the actual ingredients of it. And I just trust Gary and Keith wholeheartedly. You know, Gary's probably the least materialistic guy in the world. You know, he does not care about money, or he just wants to make the best carp bait, you know, and that was their brief. It's a good bait, Jay, a really, really good bait, without a question of a doubt. The same as, you know, if I buy the $5.99 lasagna, it's a really good lasagna. I was actually fishing two or three days ago over at a day ticket lake. I took a friend out for the afternoon, and I ended up plotting up next to a guy. And we got chatting. He's in my swim, lots of questions, we're chatting away, Paul his name was, and I'm standing there watching the water all the time, trying to keep an eye on things, and I see a silk cloud come up about 30 yards out, and I'm chatting away to him a bit more, and I see it come up again. So I've got my rod, stuck a key pop up on, and just whacked it out there. Didn't say to him I'd seen any silk kicking up or anything, and I sat it down, and he's trapping away about this key. Oh, it's a bit expensive, isn't it? And he's doing all the key jokes. Oh, the key to success, like the key to unlock the carp. And I've opened a bag, let him smell it, and we're chatting about it. Anyway, the rod's gone, Jay, and it had a key pop up on it, and I've landed this mirror up a double, lovely fish. And I've looked at him, and he knows the lake well. The lake is literally 99.9% covered in silkweed, green, horrible silkweed. And I've held this pop-up up, and I said, that is exactly the same colour as a silkweed, but that fish has found that bait and gone and nailed it, you know, within minutes. And he looked at me, I won't mention the other bait company, he looked at me, he was like, I was going to get on XXX ship, I'm going out to get a bag of that key. Like, it's good bait, Jay. But there's a lot of good baits out there, mate. I just read Crowe's editorial in Carp Talk, and, you know, he's so right. You know, you give a good angler any bait, any rod, any reel, they will go and catch carp. You know, it's more to it than just the bait, but yeah.
I can't believe the kind of arguments. It's like people have just want to put it down because it's dearer than other baits, which I just don't get. Like you say, that, you know, there's all sorts of options out there.
Sure.
But like Kev's kind of thinking behind it when he designed it, the HNV stuff, is that bigger car, you know, certain baits do select bigger fish, and that's a fact all the way through fishing. You look at a match angler, you know, who sits down for a 4-hour match, one of the top guys, you know, they start off feeding, you know, bloodworm and maggots and stuff, or jokers or whatever, for the small fish, while they're, you know, they're feeding some ground bait and corn or whatever, or pellets for later on in the match, to, you know, to get the big ones. It's going to take a bit longer, but they know they're going to move in at some point. And yes, you'll still catch bigger fish on maggots, but, you know, it runs all the way through fishing, so why wouldn't it happen with boilies?
I obviously get the catch reports, mate, you know, not only from our consultants, but also we created a thing called the A-Team, which was a team of sort of 12 anglers, and they were catching the rare ones, the, you know, the ones that did not grace the bank, or the big ones over other fish. It happened too many times, mate. Too many times, time and time again. And it's happening now. You know, now it's out in the public domain. I'm getting the catch reports in from the general public. And some people are just astounded, absolutely astounded as to what they're catching from tricky waters on it. You know, I've had other lads that have sort of wrote in or got on the phone, they can't catch on it, you know, but that's fishing. You know, I've used it for poor 2.5-3 years now, the key. I've had plenty of blanks on it. You know, it's not the absolute answer, it's just a very, very good bait.
Yeah, I bought a tub of pop-ups the other day in the local shop. Like I say, they're green, kind of barrel things. I like the smell of them, but I've not got any of the bait. I've not used it yet, but I am tempted. As you know, I've had my kind of favourite bait that Gary's done for me for years, which is, you know, on the sort of Old Faithful S mix with the sweet corn, banana and salt in it. And that has outfished every bait for me for years now. But I really want to give this key a go, I think.
This is the biggest problem now. Up until sort of this year, with regards to Nash bait, I only really had a huge amount of confidence in the Amber Strawberry. I've seen the results of everyone else on the squids and stuff, but I was never an enormous fan. I love the Amber. So it was very easy for me when I was going fishing as to what bait to choose. I'd grab a bag of Amber Strawberry. But now we've got this flipping TG Active and the key, I'm back in this horrible place again where I've got a little bit of doubt as to which to use in that, because they're both exceptionally good baits. I don't like choice, Jay. I'd rather just, you know, like you're saying, you're utterly confident in the banana sweet corn squid mix that Gal did for you. I've got this dilemma now where key TG.
As you're turning up to all these lakes, all a lot of places you might not have been before, what's like your first choice method? Is it a Zig like kind of everybody else's these days? Are you on the Zig craze?
First choice method, weather dependent and situation dependent, is a rod, a net and a mat and a pocket full of maggots, and I will go and catch something, because whether I've got cameras behind me or I'm doing a magazine article or I'm just fishing, my number one aim is to not blank. You know, it's to put a fish on the bank, and it lifts my confidence, it puts me in the zone. And if it's the winter or the water clarity is bad and I can't see anything, Zigs or chods, first port of call. You know, I want to get some rods out in the water and get fish in to try and nick an early bite. Find the fish, try and catch one quickly is usually my number one target on short session fishing.
We've had loads of Zig discussions with various people on the Carpcast. We've had Rob Hughes, Ali Hamidis. You know, a lot of people, Rob obviously does his underwater stuff. Ali and a few of the other guys, your Ian McMillans, they're just, you know, a lot of day ticket fishing, a lot of kind of, you know, quick fishing as opposed to big fishing.
Ian on them?
Sorry?
Is Ian on them?
Yeah, Ian was on number five, the last one.
No. So is he on the Zigs?
Oh, yeah. But everybody, like, it is the craze at the minute, and I've fished a few day ticket lakes this year, and it seems to be everybody's first choice method. We've had the debate of, you know, would you catch more fish during a year if you just solely carp fished on the bottom or solely carp fished on Zigs? Which method would catch you the most fish during a season? And everybody seems to think it's the Zigs. You know, carp spend more time mid-water.
That is a very difficult question to answer. I think my thinking behind it is they're a lot easier to catch on bait. A lot easier to catch. Whether you'd catch more if you only fished boilies all year than if you fished Zigs, I don't know. I think I'm contradicting myself there. I think once you can get a feeding situation going and you can fish a nice heavy lead and a short hook link and a big sharp hook, you catch a lot more fish and land a lot more fish that way. You probably would get a lot more bites. Well, I know this is a contradiction, Jay, but I think you know what I'm saying.
I don't know. I mean,
it's prone to a lot of issues, in my opinion. Losing fish, hook pulls, you know. I think a lot of the time they sort of, for the amount of hours that you'd have a bait in the water, they look at it a lot more than they actually pick it up. Whereas, you know, if you can get a little spot going and there's fish grabbing around and feeding, you can catch a lot quicker. That's a tricky question, Jay. I think I've contradicted myself.
No, I'm exactly the same. I'm torn. I do use Zigs, but it kind of feels like you're not doing the hard work. You're not creating a feeding situation, getting them down on the spot, you know, finding the spot. You can kind of, it's the old broken clock, right twice a day cliche, because you could literally stick a zig out mid-water and learn nothing about the lake, and at some point the fish are going to come past it and out of curiosity eat it, whether they're hungry or not. And it doesn't feel like fishing to me, even though I do it.
I think like, to go back on everything, if I were to actually answer that differently, I think from, say, problem is, have enough man hours, you know, you really need 365 days, fish full time that whole duration, two rod zigs, two rod bottoms, and then compile some sort of evidence to back it up. It's a tricky one. I know from, say, May through till October, I would definitely catch more fish on zigs and riser pellets than I would fishing bottom baits.
Right.
And then, I would, for sure. And then I suppose, I think I've answered the question. I think really I should fish zigs more than I do. I think we all should. It's a tricky one, bro.
I thought you were going to be the first guest, that kind of came on and wasn't totally sold on zigs, and then you let me down right at the end.
It's the way forward, bro. It's the way forward. There's too many opportunities to catch them on a zig.
Cool. Mark's finally got home from work and just joined us, I think, right near the end. Now, I wanted to mention China, really.
That's cool. China's cool. I haven't got tired of it yet. Still love going over there. In this day and age, right, it's where we produce a vast amount of our fishing tackle, and they're good at it, really good at it.
What's it like as a country when you visit for the first time?
It's like, imagine London or Manchester, but like 10 times better. It's live. All the places I've ever been to, I've been out in the sticks a couple of times. There is poverty for sure, but most of the time, the places I'm going or visiting, they're so rich, Jay. You know, they're so rich, bruv. They're just like 17, 18, 19 year olds driving around in Bentleys and Lambos and for the cars on the streets, and they're very wealthy, mate.
No way. And have they got this through?
Straight up, man. It's really cool. Like, really cool. They're a clever nation. They've got us all wrapped around their little fingers.
Do you enjoy the actual product design side of your job as much as anything? You're very creative.
Yeah, I love it. I love sitting, bouncing ideas around or addressing a problem or creating the next, you know, wonder thing. Kev's, he's the best, you know. He's so good, man. He's been doing it so long and he still comes up with the freshest ideas. So to have learned and done so much of him over the years and to now go over there on my own and take some of the other, you know, younger members of staff and carry that on, it is wicked, mate. Really cool.
Is it frustrating sometimes, like you get the ideas, you want a product out, and like sometimes you might be handcuffed by patents from other companies or because you can't get it out in time or because somebody else beats you to it when you've almost got it finished? Or
all of those things, mate, they happen. You know, it's business, it's part of what we do. Don't let it get us down, sort of get on and move forward, get on with the next great thing.
What do you see? I asked this Kev as well, but what?
I knew you'd say this.
What do you think is like the next thing? You know, I mean, without telling me stuff that you're working on, is there still revolutionary stuff to come to carp fishing?
I wouldn't want to say no because we're all the time thinking of that thing. So yes, you know, I'd like to. It's hard. It's very hard. But fishing isn't going away, carp fishing aren't going away, carp are certainly getting in a lot of cases more challenging to catch, and yeah, as anglers we need that next great thing to aid us in our carp angling. So yeah, there's going to be plenty more exciting things to come over the years, I'm sure.
But nothing in particular you're
I think Kev mentioned saying, didn't it? You know I can't say, Jay.
I'm just trying to find out what we've got in the future, but
we've got loads of exciting stuff coming out in October. The thing Kevin might have mentioned is probably not as close around the corner as that. We're still working on some stuff. But yeah, we've got some great stuff coming out in October. We've worked really hard on the scope range again. It's been an exciting sort of project for all of us over the last sort of few years. And yeah, there'll be a few more additions to the camp there, so to speak, and some other great things to keep an eye out for.
Yeah, it's the Scope brand kind of fits in with the urban Banksy type thing as well. The sneaking about and the, you know, short trips, town centres, and it just works really well, I think.
Yeah, they go together lovely, you know, but even if I'm not, you know, banging in the middle of a city somewhere, those little rods, I just feel I fish a lot better with them, Jamie. Like, I'm a lot more comfortable with them. I can do a lot more things with them, and very rarely am I hindered, you know, other than if I need to cast sort of 110, 120, 130, I have to get some 12 footers out just to get those extra few yards. But, you know, 95% of the time, my little 9 footers are just perfect.
Cool. Well, I'd like to say thank you very much for coming on the Carpcast.
It was a pleasure, mate. We'll have to get out soon and have a more of a deeper philosophical chat.
Yeah, we do often see eye to eye on a few worldly things. So, yeah, we need a social soon.
Yeah, sound, mate. So I look forward to it.
Thanks for your time, Alan. Speak to you soon.
All the best, mate. Bye-bye.
Cheers, pal. So this week's Big Carp Top Trumps is two of the nation's finest, as Mark said, the Black Mirror and the Burfield Common. We scored them out of 10 in 5 different categories. That's the weight, the fight, the looks of the fish, the difficulty of capture and the merit. It's just like the Top Trumps cards when you were kids. We pitch one against the other and see who comes out the winner. So what's the best weight of the Black Mirror, Mark?
The best weight of the Black Mirror? I did a search on previous captures. I couldn't find many, but that's because there isn't many. And Dave Lane's capture of 53 pounds plus was the biggest.
Yeah, what a chunk that is.
Yeah, if you've seen the pictures of Dave Lane with it, it looks enormous. It's one hell of a unit.
I think we have to give that a 9 then. £53 is an absolute chunk. And I happen to know, though, that I might win this one. The top weight of the Burfield Common is 57.5.
It is, you're correct. And I've just realised you happen to know that because I did all the research. I could have lied and won there.
No, I knew. It was,
we'd have had a steward's inquiry. And
it went big a few years ago, though, didn't it?
Yeah, it was a few years back. And the last capture was, again, Dave Lane at £55. And I dare say if someone catches that fish, you know, back end autumn or, you know, maybe pre-spawning, it could be huge, well over £60, I'd guess.
Yep, Dave Lane could win this comp on his own, this one, wasn't he? He's two of the finest in the land.
Yeah, I think he's a machine.
Yeah.
One hell of a photo album.
He does well at the big uns, and he's done a bit of pioneering there as well. Yeah, he's a cracking angler. I think we have to give a 10 for the 57.5.
I think we'll have to give it a 10, yes, just so you can beat me on one.
And what about the fight for the Black Mirror?
Well, again, I've done a bit of research, which wasn't too hard. A lot of things I've already read, a lot of the books and articles on the Black Mirror, and the fight is a sick fight. It was an absolutely mental fish.
Yeah, any fish that's that long and lean and that size is going to give a good account of itself, I think. It's not the ploddy, sort of big, fat-bellied one, is it? It was a proper machine. You put me on hold.
No, I had some fucking 0845 number trying to ring.
All right, it just said you've been put on hold.
Yeah.
Right, where were we?
Where were we? Black Mirror fight.
Fight, yeah.
Yeah, like you say, as any fish of that shape, that size, but it's not just playing a fish that is fighting that hard. But if you know you're attached to that fish, it's got to turn your legs to jelly.
Yeah, definitely. I think there was anything else remotely that big. So if that if you knew you're attached to it, it's going to make the fight twice as kind of heart-wrenching.
Yeah, I believe there was. I do recall some stories of a massive common that never got caught from there. But again, mythical big uncaught commons are in every lake.
I'm not sure if it was found dead when, because obviously the fish were found when they had the fish kill on there. I know lots of people that say they saw it. I'm not sure if it got, if it was found when all the other fish died.
I don't know. If we get anyone on the Carpcast who has fish call me, we'll have to bring that one up.
I think, was it not Sean...
Leverett.
Leverett that found the fish.
I believe so, yeah. He was down there when it was all occurring. Because I do remember the story. Well, it's when I was down for my one blanket at Kev Nash's lake. Sean was there. It was around that time. And if I recall rightly, they'd recovered the Black Mirror's body. They actually put her in a sack, took her out into the lake and just sunk it.
Right.
Laid her to rest in the lake.
Right. Moving on. The fight at the Birdfield Common. There is actual video footage of this, isn't there? Because Laney was doing a video blog around the time he caught it.
Yeah, he actually captured the run, the absolute run from hell it was as well, on video.
I can imagine that being an absolute screamer. The couple of fish that I've caught are known for fighting, the big ones, 40 pluses, that the run is just like absolutely screaming, non-stop, just churning. You're scared to pick the rod up type thing. I can imagine Birdfield Common being like that. It's another one that's not really a gut bucket. It's going to give a good account of itself.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. I can, watching that Dave Lane video, it's another one of those things. There is a big fish in Birdfield, other big 40-plus mirrors, but nothing in the league are that common.
No.
That is going to turn your legs to jelly again.
Yeah, well, I think both fish are going to have to take a 10 for the fight.
Yeah, without a doubt.
And what about the looks? The Black Mirror is obviously one of the most iconic fish in the UK.
I'm just going to go straight for a 10.
Yeah, I don't think anyone can argue with the looks of the Black Mirror. And the Birdfield Common, it's not too shabby looking, is it? Is it the best looking common in the land?
I'm trying to think. I might be biased and say the carving in the wool pack's better looking, but that's only because I've caught it.
Yeah, but I mean, the 48 Jim's fish that I've had, that 48 common, I think that's as equally good looking as a Birdfield Common. I mean, Birdfield Common might have to edge it being sort of £10 bigger. but there aren't any others that look like that. Now, the one in Rich Wilby's lake, that's a corker as well.
Oh, yeah, there is. That's called the carving as well, I believe.
Yep.
With white-tipped fins.
Yeah, it's an absolute banger. Are we going to give the Birdfield Common a 10?
This is going to be a very high-scoring round. I can't argue with a 10, because what both these fish have in common, they're in sizeable pits, they get very rarely caught, and they are in such good condition as well. Fit.
Leads us on to the difficulty of capture. The Black Mirror, it was tricky to fish the lake. Obviously, the lake had no fishing on there. It was like a jungle walking round. But from what I know, the people that fished it hard, that decided, didn't play at it, they decided, right, I'm on there now, I'm going to be on here till I catch it. They didn't take that long.
It took Dave Lane, was it about 7 or 8 years, fishing it on and off.
That's the key, is fishing on and off. I spoke to somebody on the Eightly, I forget who it was now, that had it. It'll come to me in a minute. And they said they'd fished it 2 or 3 years on and off, but they'd done a couple of weekends here and there and done odd nights and not really fished it super serious, like got a kit down there, left it there, and were going back as their main lake every week. The year they did decide, right, I'm not coming off there till I've caught it, it took them 16 nights. And I've had that story off a number of people. John Mack being another one, did he catch it?
I believe he did, yeah.
Yes.
Was it the Steve Pagalatis? Did he catch it?
He caught it on his first night, I think. He'd been spending a bit of time there in the close season. I remember it because it was the opening night of Yateley, June the 1st, because I was on the lake on Yateley with all his pals when he caught it. And then he'd seen it and stalked it on a bit of corn, I think, in the edge. But he'd been baiting up for a little while. But I think it was his first night.
I can't imagine just dropping a bit of corn in a margin spot and seeing that beast coming and picking it up.
He used to fish like that on Yateley. He was obviously a very good angler. But yeah, he used to stalk him out. He used to love his corn. I think he caught a lot of the 81s on corn.
Oh, but, big fish do eat corn and not just the key.
I'm sure I'm sure there are stories of people, you know, fishing it for years, but everyone I've spoke to at the court, and I spoke to two or three people, they said the same thing. Once they actually, like, committed to it and got the kit down there and sorted the access out, you know, boat into the pegs and took all kind of the ball lake out of it, they caught it within 20 nights, 25 nights, you know, from actually committing to that lake. It's the same with me with the Starburst Willington fish. Like, I had to play with that lake off and on for 2 years, a few sessions in the winter, didn't catch it, and then once, you know, bearing in mind it was quite an accessible fish, and then once I decided I was going to do it, I think it took like 8 nights, you know, that I decided, right, this is me, let's get a campaign together, let's make a plan. And I get the impression this is my impression from two or three people I've spoke to, that it was kind of like that. The lake was hard to fish, but once you actually, you know, stuck it out, you were probably going to catch it.
Yeah, the lake was illegal to fish.
Yeah, that always makes things a bit tougher. But again, in the later years, I don't think anyone was really looking for you either. But, yeah. I mean, it's still obviously up there in difficulty because of all factors put together, but I think it gets a 9 as opposed to a 10.
I think I'm going to have to give a 9 with what you've said there, yeah. I do get with what you're saying about once you've put your mind to it, you get a bit of a campaign, you get a plan together, and you can... it was catchable.
Yeah, and what about a bird from Common? We know how tricky that one is.
I wonder if I'm going to get abused for saying the Black Mirror is quite catchable.
It's relatively catchable, obviously, to actually get yourself in a position to start fishing the lake. I'm sure it will be controversial. That's in no more than people that have spent a lot of time trying to catch it. I'm sure we'll hear lots of stories of so-and-so spent years and never caught it. You know, there probably is a bit of that. But all the good anglers that I know that are capable of catching that fish, that actually dedicated a campaign there, they generally caught it, obviously, up until it died. There'll have been a few people campaigning on there, you know, and got caught short. But excuse me, let's move on to the Burfield Common. I mean, that is an accessible lake, you can fish it, and that fish just doesn't get caught very often.
No, very, very, very few and far between.
Considering the amount of anglers on there, there's quite a lot of fish to wade through, isn't there? I think, you know, I had an escape from the Blue Pool, so I think there's lots of 20s and 30s in there now. And
40s.
Yeah, I think there's at least half a dozen plus 40s, isn't there? Maybe more.
Yeah, I think there may be more. I mean, if you watch Dave Lane's videos, I believe Daryl Peck might have done a video or two on there, and I know my old mate Ed Betteridge did as well. And all of them contain some cracking fish.
Yeah, it's. I would like to fish the place because although that fish itself might be extremely hard to catch, there's lots of nice fishing to be done along the way, loads of crackers to catch.
Yeah. Have you ever had a look at the place on Google Earth?
Yeah, I have done. Yeah, it looks daunting.
It's a bit of a mess, isn't it? There's no uniform shape to it at all. There's bays, there's channels, there's gullies. Even the open water isn't that open.
I'm thinking difficulty of capture, it must get a 10. I know Nigel Sharp, a very capable angler, from when he first saw that fish, and you know, he had a good 2 years virtually full time on the place, didn't he, before he caught it?
Yeah.
And, although Dave Lane caught it reasonably quickly into his campaign, you know, it comes out once every 2 years, really, doesn't it, at best?
Yeah. Dave Lane's he shouldn't even be in the equation of difficulty just because he is superhuman when it comes to carp fishing.
And merit of capture, I don't think there's any argument over the Black Mirror. I mean, it's on most people's in the country. If you ask them, the one fish you would love to have caught, it's everybody's number one, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. I think this should be an 11.
The rules state it's from 1 to 10, or 0 to 10. So
rules are there to be broken.
No, because I think you just might edge it with an 11. 10 is the maximum, and it... without doubt gets a 10. And the merit of the Burfield Common, I mean, it's the same, isn't it? It's certainly in everybody's top three.
Yeah. And I was trying to think off the top of my head now. There's Terrian and Dave Lane who've caught them both. Is there anyone else?
I don't think so.
No.
No, I don't think so.
No, there's going to be quite a few tens in this game.
Yeah, I think it's going to have to go for a 10. And then, to be honest, we don't even need to add up the Black Mirror, because I'm just looking at the right-hand column for the Birdfield Common. It's our first ever clean sweep. 5 tens, 50 points.
It's a full house.
It's got the full house. And with 2 nines, that makes the Black Mirror 48. This week's cart top trumps winner, by a shade, with a full house, is the Birdfield Common.
Yeah.
Which seems a bit wrong. How can that fish beat the Black Mirror? I'm still not happy with that. Well, even though it's my one, I mean, wow. But, yeah, you know, numbers.
I'd be happy with either of them, to be fair. And
yeah.
Well,
what a result for the two finest anglers in the country, both to have had them both. That tells you
on a side note, while I was thinking of which fish to add for this, to get a bit of inspiration, I just put big carp captures into Google and clicked on images to see what came up. And do you know what struck me? Carp anglers are a right bunch of ugly bastards. There's all these ugly people, man. Loads of good-looking fish, but just ugly people holding them.
Cool, that's it, Sweets Carp Top Trumps. Before we go, on our sixth episode, have you seen anything that is worth a look?
Yeah. This wasn't online, though. I was flicking through some magazines in Morrison's, as you do. I'm not tight or anything, but yeah, I am actually. But I was, it was a couple of months back, I was flicking through a copy of Advanced Carp, and I noticed at the back they've got a bit of a soapbox thing, where basically people who write for the magazine get on the soapbox and basically just have a whinge. And this one, I actually bought the magazine, because a fella called Steve Collett, have you heard of him?
No.
No, I actually Googled his name and he once made a video on drop shotting.
Okay.
So, it can't be that bad. But he has a guest on his soapbox and he says, everyone wants to be famous. And he basically slates everyone who calls them a consultant or a sponsored angler. And here he says, and I quote, needs poking in the eye with a poop-covered stick.
Yes,
which I think's a bit harsh. And from someone myself, out of the game now, but spent 12 years, you know, connected to Nash and was a field tester, then a consultant, then a product ambassador.
Yeah,
I think a lot of his points are wrong. Clearly he's put, being a consultant / sponsored angler is nothing more than an ego boost. Sorry, Steve, but what a load of crap.
Well, we've mentioned consultants before, you know, this.
Yeah.
It's much more difficult to become a consultant. Bait companies need people out catching on the bait, and that's probably the most common type of field tester, as it were. And you're not testing, you're getting bait slightly discounted to make sure that, you know, captures are appearing in the press. On that bait, literally, that's it. You know, you must be able to catch fish for people to do it. But at the end of the day, the bait companies are selling you bait at the same price they're going to sell it to the shop. So you're just a customer.
Exactly. But the point I want to make is, if this was 20 years back and we had Facebook and everything, I know I'd be doing exactly the same. Not that it was my holy grail to become a consultant or anything, but if someone's got a bit of ambition and they can catch fish and a company offers them one of these positions, why not should they go for it? It's not an ego boost. I'm sure it is for some, but not as many. And to be honest, this is one page which, well, it's a bit of a whinge, to be honest. I think it is needless. But now we've mentioned it and I've slated it off, everyone will want to have a look. So there it is.
Yep,
written by a sponsored angler as well.
like we said before, you know, there's different ways of conducting yourself and posting up pictures of boxes of free gear that you get. You're purely on the ego hype, aren't you? And
that's an ego.
You know, you're a customer of the company, and you know, there aren't many true field testers or consultants for that matter. You know, consultant assumes that, you know, you're being contacted by the product designers for feedback, and there's not that many people whose opinions actually good enough to warrant that. You know, the companies and the designers, they want feedback on certain things, but generally there's a select group of people they trust to give them that.
Yeah, and they're generally the cream of the crop.
So we have endeavoured to keep our promise for 1 week so far, which is to release a podcast on every second Friday. We are up to date with that. You're off to New York. Are you going, Mark?
I'm going to New York on Monday and I can't wait. In fact, by the time this is out, I shall be a couple of days from returning home.
So have a great time there and we'll see you on the next Carpcast.
Yeah, I shall see you all then.